Enoch the prophet and seer, the end of the wicked and the beginnings of Zion, Moses 7:12 through 18, Book of Moses Insight number 24. This insight relates to the end of the end for the wicked, and the beginning of the beginning for the people of God, who start to lay the foundation of Zion. Similar events are well attested in the ancient Enoch literature. The earth trembled and the mountains fled. The Book of Moses records that when Enoch had finished prophesying to the people, the earth trembled and the mountains fled, and the rivers of water turned out of their course. The pattern whereby the voice of warning is immediately followed by the voice of the elements is also described in Doctrine and Covenants 88, 89 through 90. For after your testimony cometh the testimony of earthquakes, and also the testimony of the voice of thunderings, and the voice of lightnings, and the voice of the waves of the sea heaving themselves beyond their bounds. In a previous insight, we described ancient and modern witnesses to Enoch's turnings of rivers out of their course. In this section, we will describe similar ancient witnesses to the shattering seismic events that came according to the command of Enoch. Whereas most of the prophecies of destruction of 1st Enoch describe events of the latter days, its epistle of Enoch is also addressed to the double audience of Enoch's living posterity, called his sons. Echoing the themes of Moses 6, 46 and 47, Enoch reminds the sinners of his day that their actions are recorded in a heavenly book of remembrance, telling them that, quote, from the angels inquiry will be made into your deeds in heaven, end of quote. Then Enoch asked them, quote, when the Most High hurls against you the flood of the fire of your burning, where will you flee and be saved? And when he utters his voice against you with a mighty sound, will you not be shaken and frightened? The heavens and all the luminaries will be shaken with great fear, and all the earth will be shaken and tremble and will be thrown into confusion, and all the angels will fulfill what was commanded them. And all the sons of earth will seek to hide themselves in the presence of the great glory, and they will be shaken and tremble. And you sinners will be cursed forever. You will have no peace. End of quote. Note that this passage from the epistle not only echoes the trembling of the earth in Moses 7:13, but also the shaking of the heavens in Moses 7:61. The shaking and trembling of the elements reverberates sympathetically to the shaking and trembling of the wicked, as an ancient motif found in the book of Moses that we've discussed in a previous insight. The curse upon all people that fought against God in Moses 7:15 is consistent with the declaration in the epistle that the sinners will be cursed forever. Pouring out and drawing back of the waters. Hugh Nibley has summarized Jewish traditions that tell of the perturbation of the waters of the earth before and after Enoch's time. Quote, the really spectacular show in the Enoch literature is the behavior of the seas. Like the alternating drought and flood from the skies, there is either too much sea or not enough. Before the floods came and swallowed them up, the sea first drew back in places, leaving its coastal beds high and dry in anticipation of the great tsunami sea wave, which came with the earthquake, end of quote. Although the biblical flood of Noah has received greater attention, Jewish tradition also remembers an earlier flood covering a large portion of the ancient world in the days of Enosh, Enoch's great-grandfather. Quote, when people began to call their idols by the name of the Lord, the ocean rose from Akko to Jaffa and flooded a third of the world. Then said the Lord, you have prepared a new thing for yourselves and called it by my name. Now I want to do something new and tell you by my name, is it not written? He that calleth for the waters of the sea and poureth them out upon the face of the earth, the Lord is his name. End of quote. The decisive battle. The land which came up out of the depth of the sea. An unexpected detail in Moses 7 is the mention of the land which came out of the depths of the sea. There are hints in Jewish tradition that volcanic activity could have been behind this event. According to one such text, among the, quote, four things that changed in the world at the time of Enoch was that the mountains had previously been plowed and sown were made rocky, end of quote. Wars and bloodshed. Moses 7:16 gives us the brief notice that, quote, from that time forth there were wars and bloodshed among them, end of quote. Unfortunately, the extant fragments of the Aramaic Book of Giants likewise preserve only a few words about what must have been a long series of bloody battles. In one fragment, The leader of Enoch's adversaries is said to have lamented, "I went up against all flesh, and I made war against them, but I did not prevail, and I am not able to stand firm against them. And they were not defeated, for they are stronger than I." End of quote. Attributing the brevity of the Aramaic witness to these battles to the sparsity of the preserved remains of the document, John Rees goes on to describe how the Manichaean remnants of the Book of Giants preserve extensive testimony regarding this conflict. For example, here's an extract from the Manichaean Book of Giants fragment that gives a more detailed account of the final combat. Quote, "The angels took and imprisoned all the rebellious watchers that were in the heavens, and the angels themselves descended from the heaven to the earth. And when the 200 demons saw these angels, they were much afraid and worried. They went to fight, and these 200 demons fought a hard battle with the four angels until the angels used fire, naphtha, and brimstone." End of quote. As angels from heaven and the very elements of earth joined to defend the people of Enoch, the battles entered a new phase. Richard Draper, Kent Brown, and Michael Rhodes explained, quote, "Heretofore we have found references to enemies who came to battle against the people of God. The account of Moses 7:15, in other words, the people that fought against God, makes it clear that battling against God's people had become the same as battling against God himself." End of quote. The end of the wicked and the beginnings of Zion. Doctrine and Covenants 88:91 describes the human consequences that inevitably follow destruction of such devastating extent. Quote, "And all things shall be in commotion, and surely men's hearts shall fail them, for fear shall come upon all people." End of quote. Similarly, we read in the Book of Moses that the fear of the Lord was upon all nations, and that the giants of the land stood far off. The Elder Neil A. Maxwell commented, quote, "The gospel glow shining about a righteous individual or a righteous people usually attracts persecution, but this is not the only accompanying sign. Enoch could tell us something about this phenomenon. Those in his ancient Zion were resented by some who stood afar off. Latter-day Saints are not yet a fully worthy people, but even now there is building a visible ring of resentment around Zion today." End of quote. Elder Maxwell's idea of Zion, or perhaps more precisely the Temple of Zion, or for that matter any temple, as a center place, radiating holiness to the world with increasingly strident rings of resentment formed by the wicked, corresponding in strength to degrees of distance from the divine nucleus, is a general concept that might resonate in many ancient cultures. Though symbolic representations of a hierocentric universe vary in significant details, many ancient maps and diagrams in various cultures around the world are constructed around a sacred center. This sacred center not infrequently coincides with the locations of a mountain. For example, with respect to the structure of the Korean map shown here, Mark E. Lewis notes, "There's a progressive decline as one moves away from the center." End of quote. Typically in the ancient world, such movement away from the center is represented as being in an eastward direction. Correspondingly, there's an increase in sacredness as one travels, or returns, toward the center, generally in a westward direction. Note the large medallion with the name of China that is shown near the middle of the map shown here, just east of Mount Kunlun, anciently revered as the sacred center of the universe where heaven and earth meet and from which four great rivers emanate. Though we are not suggesting that the Chan Hado maps, such as the one above, and the Sogdian fragments of the Book of Giants have any necessary relationship, there is some evidence of weak and distant influence in the resemblance of the symbolic geography of Mount Kunlun to that of Mount Meru. Of relevance for the present article is that Mount Meru, the sacred mountain of Hinduism, Jainism, and Buddhism, is mentioned in the Manichaean Book of Giants as the place of resort for the righteous. When seen in the light of hierocentric maps of the world, certain details relating to the layout of sacred symbolic geography in both ancient Enoch accounts and the Book of Moses take on greater meaning. Though the symbolic geography tells us little, or more likely nothing, about the physical geography of the story, knowing something about it helps unravel the significance of events in this section of the narrative. For example, in answer to Mahijah's question in Moses 6:41, Enoch replied, quote, "I came out from the land of Canaan, the land of my fathers, a land of righteousness unto this day." Amplifying the Book of Moses' description of Enoch's home as a land of righteousness, The leader of the Gibeorim in the Book of Giants stated that his opponents resided in the heavens and lived with the holy ones. In line with the presumed hierocentric symbolic geography of Enoch's world, we are not surprised to read the significant detail that his missionary journey in the Book of Moses took him away from the sacred center. In other words, he went out from the land of Canaan, a land of righteousness in the west, to the land of the wicked, presumably near the western edge of the sea east. Remarkably, the Book of Moses' description of Enoch's journey and vision by the sea east recalls the direction of his voyage in 1 Enoch 20 through 36, where the text seems to imply that he continued his travels even further east to the ends of the earth, from the west edge of the earth to its east edge. Similarly, 1 Enoch also records a vision that Enoch received by the waters of Dan, arguably a sea east. Though the mountains at the center of the symbolic geography of the world represent the most sacred place on earth, its east edge, the dawn horizon, the location of the boundary where the round dome of heaven meets the square plane of earth, is not only where visions of God are situated in relevant literature, but also the place from which actual heavenly ascents were made in many ancient cultures, or at least were thought to occur. Enoch describes his journey as being to the ends of the earth, on which the heaven rests and the gates of heavens open, and gives a brief account of its great beasts and birds with beautiful voices. Likewise, description of Methuselah's journey to the end of the earth, where Enoch's dwelling is with the angels, can be plausibly understood as allusions to the Garden of Eden. In a fragment in the Manichaean Book of Giants, one of Mahweh's journey to visit Enoch is clearly from the west to east and back again. Among his other qualifications to make this voyage to the eastern edge of the earth, he seems to be the only giant with wings. Just as Enoch, who flew east with the angels, used this mode of transportation to visit areas that normally humans cannot reach, so also, quote, the flight of Mahweh should be understood in a similar way. He is able to reach Eden because he can fly over a desolate desert that would be, following this logic, impossible to cross on foot. This underscores the extraordinary and difficult nature of his voyage. Asking Mahweh to undertake such an arduous journey highlights how seriously the Gibeorim wanted an interpretation to the two visions of Ohyah and Hayah. Once Enoch's presence has been veiled after his heavenly ascent, Jens Wilkins observes that only Enoch's voice is mentioned. In an explanation of this state of affairs, Wilkins mentions a Uyghur fragment of the Book of Giants where a speaker, likely Mahweh, referring to Enoch, says, but I did not see him in person. From the combined evidence, it seems that we are meant to understand that the scene of Mahweh's voice-to-voice, not face-to-face visit with Enoch, takes place in the sky rather than on earth on this occasion. Presumably, Mahweh can speak with Enoch through the veil, but is not permitted to see Enoch in his transfigured state in the divine realm. There is evidence of both supporters and detractors of Enoch among the Gibeorim. For example, a Sogdian fragment of the Book of Giants tells us that a righteous faction are glad at seeing the apostle, who is obviously Enoch, and assembled before him. But those who are called tyrants and criminals are afraid. According to the Manichaean Book of Giants, angels ultimately led the wicked to their eventual destruction in the east, away from the sacred center, while the righteous went westward to inhabit cities near the foot of the holy mountain that had been prepared for them in the beginning. Quote, and they led one half of them eastwards and the other half westwards, on the skirts of four huge mountains towards the foot of the Sumeru, meaning Good Meru, mountain, into 32 towns which the living spirit had prepared for them in the beginning, end of quote. In the highly symbolic account of the geographical history of the two opposing groups, the Book of Giants describes the righteous dwelling westwards on the skirt of four huge mountains. Significantly, this imagery recalls Moses 7:17, which relates that the righteous, quote, were blessed upon the mountains and upon the high places and did flourish, end of quote. Where in all the ancient Enoch tradition do we find the remarkably similar story of the gathering of Enoch's converts to a community of refuge in the mountains? Only in the Book of Giants and the Book of Moses. In a later insight, we will describe the rise of this holy place of refuge, whose residence the Lord called Zion.